right, folks, second hour of the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, with my special guest, Eric Jones. Before you get to those 2 points, Eric, I want to remind the audience, this kind of stuff really sticks in my craw, because I've gone through this more than once. I went through it with Susan Lindauer. John Stadtmiller and I both went through it with Ed and Elaine Brown. John Stadtmiller feels the same way I do. John Stadtmiller gave Ed and Elaine Brown a voice, for those of you who remember, on his own network during that standoff, only to be sabotaged by our buddy Alex Jones when John and I took the time, the money, the energy, through the donations of our listening audience, to take Randy Weaver up there and try to get that situation alleviated. So with that, make your points. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, on your list, I do agree with you that government has no case at all. And I'm like you, I'm hoping that, and I'm thinking that as soon as the Nevada trials are over and they know he's not a threat to be reporting that, I'm hoping they're going to let him go because they realize they have no case. But on your list of why they, you know, you said two things that I kind of wanted to just counter, and one of them was you didn't think they could get enough shills to stack the jury, and it's taxpayer dollars to fund the trial that cost too many. They'd be happy to spend more of our money on the trial because it doesn't come out of their pocket. It comes out of ours, and they have unlimited resources, and they also have an unlimited supply of shills. They're no problem finding shills to put on the jury. So I'm just a little more pessimistic because I saw it happen in some trials where the jury was completely stacked. The Shane Bennett case, 4 or 5 out of the 40 people, 10% of the jury pool had immediate family members who were New York State troopers. That's not a normal percentage of the population, so you could tell they were stacking the jury right from the very jury pool, you know, notification letters when they went out. There was this suspiciously void of anybody who was a business owner or an entrepreneur or a farmer or any kind of do-it-yourselfer. Everybody was in some way or another attached to the system. So I think that they have a lot easier time stacking these juries than we may think. Didn't know until I saw it happen
Now, you bring up a good point, Eric, and so I have to ask you, geographically speaking, politically speaking, that particular area where he is right now, where he is to be tried in the federal court, politically, do they lean – I think they're more left-leaning than right. Am I correct? I mean, that's a Democratic state.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll cut right to the – it's the best place that he could be right now is Portland, because yes, overtly, superficially, Portland is kind of looks to be a leftist leaning place, but I've lived there and I know the people there, whether they're on the left or the right of the political spectrum, they all can't stand the government. None of them trust or like the government, whether you're on the left or the right. So even the people who are quote unquote a little more to the left of center toward a socialist thing, they don't want the government doing the socialism. They want like a natural, organic, charity based, communal, you know, they want the government out of their business too. So both sides of the spectrum are hip to the, and by the way, Portland is, I think, the biggest city. Well, I don't know if still anymore because many have taken it out, but it's consistently every year they vote down putting fluoride in the water, and it comes back up every year, and every year they vote it down. So they're much better critical thinkers there. They don't can't stand the government, whether you're on the left or the right. So that's the best place you could be right now, yeah.
Okay, well, that brings up an interesting point, because I was just last night in my own website. I did an expose on fluoride several years ago. As a matter of fact, there's a video of it on my website with my I did it with my daughter back in 2013. People don't realize what actually is in the water other than just fluoride. It's hydrofluorosilicic acid. It's industrial waste that's in there. But that's off topic. Let's get back to this. Okay, so the good news is that he's in a place – he couldn't be in a better place for that to happen. Now, the next question I have for you is – and maybe you know the answer, maybe you don't. But you're talking about jury shills. Now, are you talking about people that the government deliberately puts in the jury pool?
Oh, absolutely. They have the list. Absolutely, I could tell. And only when I went in and really witnessed it would I make this conclusion. I wouldn't just say it because I think it, but I actually went in and saw it. But yeah, there was clear. I mean, one guy was the assistant mayor for a local town, and the other person was a CPA. And then there was the woman who was a paralegal, who very suspiciously was chatting with the jury foreman woman who held the keys to lock the jury in the room at the deliberations. I noticed later, and had to think back, where did I see these two women together as soon as they came? As she was friends with one of the people that worked for the court, one of the women in the jury pool. She was a paralegal, and they had her removed. The defense had her removed because they could tell that she was going to do the system thing and not do the justice thing. So, oh, and then there was a woman who said, my son's a state trooper. And then the other woman said, my husband's a state trooper. And then, I mean, there's only out of 35 or 40 people. It was just went on and on like that. Ad infinitum. And I could, no business owners, nobody who was a farmer or a trucker or, you know, a business owner.
A shop owner, a janitor, or whatever. Yeah, I get you.
Anything.
Get you.
Yeah, nothing like that where it would be somebody who would think independently. Everybody had some attachment to the certain club at the country club that with their flower making or knitting, and it was just everybody was attached to some part of the system, either peripherally or directly. It was amazing, and so it all kept coming back to that. Wow, you know, this is not by accident that they put this together.
No, I see. I have a tendency, and I can be as pessimistic as the next person, but in this case. And I relate it back to the Susan Lindauer case. I'm more optimistic that it's never going to come to the trial. I believe that they'll drop the charges as soon as all of the other trials are out of the way and they have no reason to keep him. I think that they're going to take a look at this as a waste of time. You know, and this is what John and I were trying to do with Randy Weaver taking him up to Plainfield, New Hampshire. If we would have had the opportunity to put Randy across the table from Judge McAuliffe, there was a possibility. I'm not saying it was a great possibility, but if Judge McAuliffe would have had any empathy for the situation at hand, taken into consideration he lost his wife in the shuttle disaster, Randy lost his wife at Ruby Ridge, I think it's possible if we caught him at the right moment, under the right circumstances. And after I watched the conversation that John Stattmiller had with the sheriff up there for 45 minutes and what John did so distinctly and so methodically to put that sheriff in a corner, I think John and Randy Weaver together with Judge McAuliffe could have done the same thing. And, you know, so I've been down this road before. I've seen the tactics that people use, and especially the feds. And I'm optimistic. I would say I'm 80% sure that it'll never go to a trial. Now, I could be wrong, but even if it does, okay, I'm still more likely than not he will get acquitted. So with that, you have not heard of anything regarding a plea bargain to this point, right?
Right. No, I haven't heard anything about a plea bargain, and it sounded to me like his recent frame of mind was that he was going to make a stand and not take any plea bargain. So that would be probably a wise thing if he can make it. You know, I would recommend he hold. I don't ever tell people what to do, but, you know, I would like to see him, you know, not take a plea bargain. Sometimes they'll just make you sign a piece of paper that says you won't, he's in the Stephen Dean case, it actually said he wouldn't hang out with any groups that were anti-government or something like that. So, you know, I'm glad he signed it to get out. Because then you can just do a retraction later and say you signed it under duress and just retract the statement. I mean, that's right. What the term duress is for. It's you're forced to do something. I don't recommend people stay in just to be stubborn and not sign a piece of paper. I mean, okay. Cross your fingers behind your back and lie and sign the thing and get out and then do a declaration of retraction and explain how you were being tortured and locked in a cage and, you know, it was you were forced to sign this piece of paper. You do not stand by it. You were done under duress, and that's all.
No, I get it. You've made your point. Now, do we know how he's being treated in there right now, or what
shitty.
Kind of food he's?
I'm sorry. Whoops. Sorry about that. Not
yeah,
good.
On this program, it's excrementally or feces-ally. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
Really bad. He's back. He was in solitary confinement. They let him out into general population and then rescheduled him back into solitary confinement, and nobody knows why. There was no cause given. There was no fight or anything weird that happened that was, you could say, oh, it's because of that. They're doing it to try to mess with his mind, to try to either get him to take a plea or just interfere with him fighting his own case.
Now, let me interject this, because I know that's what they were doing, because I, off topic a little bit, I followed very many tax trials. I followed the trial of Glenn Ihey, Irwin Schiff, Larkin Rose. I can go on and on and on, okay? Pete Hendrickson, all of these people. And that's what they do, okay? Irwin Schiff died in prison. He was convicted on tax crimes, alleged tax crimes, and they sentenced him. At the time they sentenced him, I believe he was, 86 years old, 82 years old, something like that. He died in prison. He died handcuffed to his bed. They had him handcuffed to his bed. And he refused. They offered to let him go, from what I understand, after he had done 4 or 5 years. All they wanted him to do was retract everything he had said about the income tax, and he flatly refused to do it. He said, "No, I'm not doing that because I know I'm right." And so they just left him there, and he ultimately died in prison. And they did the same thing with Susan Lindauer. They try to psychologically melt you down. So hopefully he's of strong mind, and he realizes that that's what they are trying to do. That's the whole reason for the solitary confinement, Eric. Is because you're not able to communicate with other prisoners. You're not able to, voice your opinion or get any input from anybody. He doesn't have access to any law library or anything, right?
That's correct. Yeah, that's now all of a sudden restricted. So now if he's representing himself, which was, I think, where he was leaning toward getting rid of his attorney, which was doing no good. It was an appointed counsel that worked for the government and a whole bunch of other issues with UN Agenda 21 paperwork and stuff like that. So the guy was not a friend to Tom.
You don't have any information about, how the attorney's proceeding in this case, or any information that the attorney has given to Tom. You don't know anything about that, right?
Oh, no, I know some. He's ineffective counsel. Let's just put it that way. Tom knows it and has said it. Lori has said that Tom knows it. Lori has said it. They're trying to work with the guy, but because he's, it's the court's not going to be friendly with him just changing attorneys. I guess if Tom wants to get rid of him and represent himself, I heard that he was thinking about doing that. That's probably a better bet. The attorney's going to sell him out. At least if he represents himself, he gets to make his direct statement in case to the jury. I think probably a better chance to do that if you're smart like Tom is. And you can prepare your case. Right now he can't do that. So this is why the deck is stacked against him and all of the accused. They can't get any paperwork or any books to get to the law library when you're on, 22-hour
lockdown. Let me ask you this question. If he dispensed with his attorney, would they then allow him to prepare his case in the law library or,
I have no idea, but I would say I would doubt it unless they're going to bend in him. This is why I want the phone calls to keep coming in, because if he needs to get out, at least to get to prepare his case. They've already got him locked up. Why can't he at least be in general population to getting to the library? I don't know. I think he can request books and he can send out for stuff, but he doesn't have this time and this even freedom, so to speak, in within the jail to get into the library and research his case.
Okay, the normality of a charge like this, and I don't know whether you've investigated this or not. I mean, this is relatively new to me on this. But have you done any investigation regarding the normality of a judge granting bail in a case like this or not?
This is all under the Patriot Act, and they're not saying it. I had it happen in the Stephen Dean case. This happened a couple of years ago when we first got going with the phone blitzes and the Court of Observers, and the prosecutor actually said, we need to hold, and it was the exact same charge as Tom's, that 18 years, that's how I know it. We went through this before. And in his case, they arrested him. They lured a couple of undercover FBI guys, asked him if he wanted to go out to the shooting range. And they knew he was at Bundy, and they knew he had a prior felony from years ago, just a minor statutory nonviolent. So they said, "You want to go out to the shooting range?" They put the gun in his hand. He took a couple of shots at the target and went home. And 2 months later, they had arrested him to take him out of the picture because he was getting involved with, running for common law sheriff and all these, state activist things.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that's so, the same thing. It's a similar thing that happened to Randy Weaver in the sawed-off shotgun. So, that's another
right.
In court,
to get back to your question, in court, the prosecutor said, "We need to hold Stephen Dean on his political beliefs because he's hanging around with groups that are anti-government." And, and which was absurd. He was strictly a political activist handing paperwork to his local judges and clerks. He mm-hmm. was filing lawful paperwork, and they didn't like it. And they said him up. They knew he had a felony. They knew he. They knew if they could get a gun in his hand just for a second, they could have the possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Oh, and if you read down the statute and go back on, pull up your 18 U.S. 922 G1, go down to, like, G7, and it says anyone knowingly placing the gun in the hand of a convicted felon is committing a felony, and that's what the FBI did, so they committed multiple felonies before he even did anything. So anyway, and they said that they said we need to hold him without bail. Now, this guy hadn't done anything. He hadn't hurt anybody. He hadn't conspired to hurt anybody. And he was strictly a political activist. And they set him up and took him down and said at his arraignment hearing, oh, by the way, the first judge at the arraignment hearing for Stephen Bean in Utah got up after some suspicious whispering, got up and recused herself midway through the arraignment, the bail hearing, okay? And another judge came in and sat down and was perfectly happy to go along with what the government was claiming, which is this guy is a anti-government political activist, and he's very dangerous, and he hangs around groups that are against the government, and we need to hold him without bail. And they're violating not only the state constitution, but the federal constitution as well, which both say bail must be granted unless it's an allegation of murder. And these guys aren't being accused of hurting anybody. So they absolutely said it in court, and that was when it became just completely obvious, because they said, hold him without bail, Magistrate Peed, P-E-A-D was his name. And Magistrate Peed said, sure, I'll be happy to hold him on his political beliefs. 82 days he was in there. And then Judge Benson, who was the trial judge, who I actually talked to at the very, very beginning, before he even knew this was his case, and it kind of got, it was a good thing I called him right away, because it got the gears turning in his head. He said it was a little unusual that the arraignment proceedings were sealed and locked.
Okay. All right, let me interject here. Where is it written? I mean, you know, refresh my memory here. Where is it written that anything under the act of murder, I guess, a citizen is entitled to reasonable bail? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
And right in both the federal and the state constitution both say that, yeah.
Well, if that's the case, and I know you're right. I couldn't remember. I know it's been brought up a time or two, but, you know, I don't know where to look without doing some digging. But if that's the case, then yes, this is this involves the Patriot Act, because if they're being held without bail, and I will say this, that ultimately during Susan, I'll go back to Susan, ultimately they were having hearings on her. She was incarcerated for 11 months, and it was, let's see, I would say probably 9 or 10 months into it. We put enough pressure on those people between myself and the radio networks that were broadcasting, and Janet Phelan, Michael Collins that were reporting about it, that they ultimately let her out. And then there was a hearing to put her back in. I can't remember the particulars of it. That's part of the reason I wanted to have her up on the program tonight. But yes, this was a battle that went on for several months. Shifting gears, though, okay? Now, when you were on the network, you were advising people or hoping people, giving a number to call to the sheriff's department there in Oregon, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So, and what were you advising them to say to the sheriff?
Okay, Sheriff Trapp, T-R-A-P-P. The legal definition of sheriff is the chief peace officer in the county or subdivision. That means you're the chief peace officer. You're not underneath the marshals. You're not underneath the FBI or the CIA or Interpol or the Jesuits from the Vatican. You are the chief peace officer. Exercise your chiefness and let him walk away. Why? Because we are exercising a courtesy hold, and this is what they call it, a U.S. Marshals courtesy hold. You do not have to hold him. You should not and cannot hold him because he's being unlawfully denied bail.
Okay, hold on. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll continue when we get back from the break. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special guest, Eric Jones. Stick around. I'll open the phone lines after the break. Be right back.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER, stat. Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's I-C-A-N-G-E-T, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. My special guest, Eric Jones. And now the phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. If you want to call in with a question, your perceptions, any comments that you'd like to make. Now, you've heard my optimism. Now you're going to hear my pessimism here, Eric. And that is, we've been through this before with John going up to talk to the sheriff in Plainfield, New Hampshire. The sheriff, yes, he's the chief peace officer, but the problem is that most of these sheriffs get funding, they get equipment, they get, you know, grants from the government, and the sheriff is likely either compromised by it, locked into it, or afraid of the federal government. At least most of them are, and I cite you an example of one who wasn't, and that's my own former sheriff here in Maricopa County, Arizona, Joe Arpaio, who went after Barack Obama on the birth certificate issue, and right now he's facing criminal contempt charges. He was ousted from office basically with a lot of support from George Soros and also Barack Obama for Paul Pinzon to get him ousted from his seat, and they've gone after him for a criminal contempt charge, violating a court order against what they call racial profiling on the immigration issue. So this is why if there's a courtesy hold on somebody and the sheriff kind of, bends over and says, yes, sir, anything you say, sir, because they want to continue with their funding or they don't want to wind up like Joe Arpaio wound up. Now, I'm not saying that people shouldn't call in there. I'm saying that it's likely not going to have any effect. Go ahead, your thoughts.
Well, you know, it doesn't mean we give up trying. And,
no.
Let me tell you some good news. In the Stephen Dean case, I'll bring it up again, the sheriff of Utah County, which is where Salt Lake City is, major county, his name's Jim Tracy, he said he was getting hundreds of calls and he was attempting to return all of them in the case of Stephen Dean. So it does make an impact. I would never say it's a foregone conclusion. You make it through to this guy. Enough public pressure, he may bend. You know, he may not be able to handle hundreds and hundreds of phone calls, and I think that's why, from my experience, the system will always cave in. It's just a matter of when, but there has to be enough pressure. It has to be overwhelming, like really overwhelming. So
okay.
That's why everybody has to call.
Okay, let's hold that thought for a moment. Go ahead.
Okay.
I was going to say, I've got a call.
Let me get back to my short list of what do you say to the sheriff, because I know that's a challenge. Number one, sheriff, you're the chief peace officer. Have guts. The people will back you up. Do not be afraid of the feds. You're the chief, and you have to exercise your duty to protect Tom LaCavara. Number one, let him out. Number two, if you're not going to let him out, he's being unlawfully denied bail. You are not required to hold him on a courtesy hold. Stop being courteous to the marshals. Be courteous to Tom. And by the way, at least remind him that Tom was never in possession of any firearm, and constructive possession is a lie. And then also, if they're not going to let him go, at least require that he be let out of solitary confinement immediately so he can prepare for his case and stop being tortured. Torture is an international crime, and this can go way, way past the court system of the United States of America and into the world court, and let him get the hint that he's going to be put on trial like the Germans were after World War II. That's a legitimate threat. That's entirely lawful to put Nazis on trial and give them a summary execution after a speedy trial. So if you want to turn the pressure up a little, tell him he may be indicted by a common law grand jury of the people. And then we have every right to do that because the district attorney's not going to prosecute you. Sheriff, we don't want to prosecute you. We don't want to have to convene the 25 people from the community and bring forth a lawful presentment for your unlawful activity. These are international war crimes you're committing. You must let him out of solitary confinement immediately. And just leave. That's the best you can do. Okay, then if he refuses to comply, hey, everybody, at least you've done your part by making the phone call. It will have helped Tom, trust me. And, of course, God is watching, so we can't do nothing. We have to do something. And right now, other than violence, emails, letters, and phone calls to Tom, to the judge, to the sheriff, and to the Vicar General, we can go down that rabbit hole on another show.
Okay, let me stop you right there. I want to go to William in Montana. William, you're on with Michael and Eric. Go ahead. What's your thoughts?
Hi, Michael and Eric.
Hi.
I just finished reading a U.S. Marshal from Florida who wrote a paper on when do U.S. Marshals get involved in local cases. And he said that, the marshals are assigned, that they basically work for the federal courts, but they can also be assigned by the attorney general to help local law enforcement officers.
Okay, so William, let me stop you. We got to go to a break. I'm going to hold you over, okay?
Okay.
I'm interested in hearing what you have to say, but let's take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back, and I'll go right back to you, William.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com.
This is Dr. Bill Deagle of the NutriMedical Report, 12 to 3, Monday to Friday. Call-ins are welcome to the show. You can order at 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com.
The new word on the street is bloated. Yeah, you eat this food, GMO, herbicide, pesticide. Foods aren't safe anymore. And then we eat them, and we're bloated. Our stomach says, no, no, no more, Seymour. So what we have to do is drink the tea. Are you on the tea? GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Super strength tea. It will help you with the new word, bloated. You can get it today. Log on to GetTheTea.com.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog is your host, with my special guest Eric Jones, who was the sit-in host for Tom LaCavera after Tom LaCavera was incarcerated. I'm going to go back to William. Continue your thought, William. Go ahead. You were along with the marshals. Go ahead.
Yeah, so basically the U.S. marshals work for the federal courts, but they can also be assigned by the U.S. Attorney General to help local law enforcement. But there has to be some criteria that are met. Usually, it has to involve violent crime or serious felonies or cases that involve guns or drugs. But what happens is that when they are assigned to a local law enforcement agency, they create what's called a task force, and all the members are sworn in as special marshals who are going to serve on this task force. And one of the big advantages of this is it means that they are not restricted by local jurisdiction. And so they a lot of times local law enforcement have real difficult problems dealing with fugitive investigations or trying to get fugitives extradited from other states or other jurisdictions. And so the Justice Department uses the federal marshals to help the local and smaller law enforcement agencies to deal with these more expensive and complex things where they have to transport people across state lines. And that's probably what happened in this case, where they had to use U.S. Marshals to get him from the East Coast.
Well, yeah, and let me interject here, William. the only issue, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Eric, but the outside force of the marshal, which this is a federal case, but he's being held by a sheriff, which is a county sheriff, on a courtesy hold. Who would it be that would have – are you saying, William, that somebody ordered or must have ordered, you know, from the state level of Oregon to ask the assistance of the marshal, or that the attorney general, which is more along the lines that I would lean, would be responsible for what happened in Tom's case?
Well, it can – because this involved, you know, maybe technically, or it's a stretch, but – because it involved the possibility of a felony person in possession of a firearm, that this might be one of their – this would fit their criteria, even mm-hmm. though there wasn't any harm, there was no a threat, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it sounds like what they did is they requested help, and they were the U.S. Marshals were assigned to this case to facilitate getting someone – from a distance and bringing him back to Oregon. And I think, well, one of the reasons they wanted to bring him to Oregon or to Utah is that that's where all their people were, and they probably wanted to do this in one fell swoop.
Okay, Eric, you want to chime in here?
Yeah, they're nothing more than interstate errand boys. Yeah, they transport, they go get people at the behest of well, here's Black's Law, 5th edition, Black's Law Dictionary, Marshall. The president, that's Trump, T-R-U-M-P, the president is required to appoint a U.S. marshal to each judicial district. It is the responsibility of U.S. marshals to execute all lawful writs, process, and orders issued under the authority of the United States. In executing the laws of the United States within a state, a marshal may exercise the same powers which a sheriff of the state may exercise in executing the laws thereof, blah, blah, blah. Now that's Black's Law. I got my problems with Black's Law. Everything is to uphold the system in Black's Law. But, yeah, ultimately the definition is the president. It falls on Trump. He's the one that appoints the head marshals to each a head marshal for each district, and then that guy hires sub-marshals. This is all mm-hmm. being done at the behest of and with full knowledge and consent of Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump.
Well, now let me back you up here, though. Okay, he was arrested on December 15th. Donald Trump didn't take office until January 8th.
He could push the button that lets him go.
So are you saying that Donald Trump has the power to say, okay? Well, I imagine he does. But
yep, I have reason to believe not only Sessions knows for sure, but Trump most likely knows about this case and all these cases in particular, and he's running us off to war. And not a word about the Patriot persecution of 2017 from anyone, whether it's in the administration or their water boys over at InfoWars.
Right. Okay. So let me say this. Had I known about this 2 weeks ago, I would have been sitting in the position of saying, you know what? Knowing or thinking I knew what Trump was and what he was going to do, I would have said, you know what? We've got a shot there. But after what I've seen happen in the past week and a half, I don't see that happening. I think that let's put it this way: the Trump train is slowing down, and I'm about ready to get off the caboose because his actions, he's turned the military decisions over anything short, from what I understand, of a nuclear bomb over to the military. And these guys are a couple of crazed lunatics, McMasters and Mattis. William, you have anything else you want to add before I let you go?
Yeah, I've seen this. Unfortunately, it's a very depressing observation, but, you know, Mattis and McMaster, and then this new guy who's in charge of, the CENTCOM, I mean, they all have this idea that whenever you get civilians, politicians involved in the military, things go bad. I mean, they're all on record of saying this. And basically what I've seen is a capitulation by the Trump, administration. I mean, if you saw, I think a lot of this stuff that has happened, the Moab and all those missiles and the attack on Syria, it was a diversionary tactic. Because if you see the number of neocons that have slipped in the back door through Kushner and Ivanka.
I mean, it's just
amazing. It's amazing what has happened in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I
really appreciated your summary because that has to get out there. I mean, this is what has happened is beyond what I thought was possible.
Well, I'm trying to determine the best route to go, and Eric, I'm sure you'll agree with me, probably the best route to go is the first one, which is, yes, you know, try to put some pressure on the sheriff and at least get him released out of solitary or, if not, get him bail. One other thing I want to add, have you, Eric, or has anybody that is surrounding or supporting Tom got any access to or made any contact with any outside attorney to try to find out specifically if, you know, the Patriot Act is shadowing this or what specifically it is? Because obviously this public defender is not going to give anybody any information.
And most attorneys won't give anybody – even if they have private views on that, they're not going to – you're going to be very – I would love to see it, but it's very difficult to find an attorney who's going to say, yeah, these are the Patriot Act. That's what's going on. They're not going to admit it publicly. They know what's going on privately, though, that's for sure. And this is all Southern Poverty Law Center, Patriot Act, Patriot equals terrorist.
Well, I'm sad to say I agree with you, and I'm sure, William, you probably agree as well. And it goes beyond that because what we're seeing happening right now with a number of the Patriots, along with this censoring and along with this, and I didn't even get to this, you and I had talked about this off the air, Eric, as far as what they're doing, as far as even telephone calls, people trying to listen in to Patriot shows via the telephone, and Sprint is, you know, censoring that. Matter of fact, there's an article up on Republic right now regarding that very issue of informing people of where they can go or what provider they can have to listen to Patriot News. So with that, all right, anything else you want to add before I let you go, William?
Yeah, I mean, I lived in Portland for 34 years before I had the sense to move to Montana, and one of the things that I know about the Portland area is that even though these left-wingers don't like the government, I mean, as soon as you mention Patriot, I mean, they have been so mind, controlled that as soon as you mention Patriot, they just think white racist, anti-Semitic, gun nut, and I don't think that he's going to get a real fair hearing by the average person on the street if they ever make it to the jury. I hate to say that, but I mean, they are very anti-white. Nationalists. I mean, all you have to do is say that you own a gun, and they back away from you. So it's not the best environment to have a case like this before the courts. Unfortunately,
well, I noticed a little bit better light. But let's just look at recent history. The recent trials, federal trials of the Bundys in Oregon, in Portland, and the jurors walked out. They found the defendants not guilty. They walked out, and they actually told the protesters that the jury nullification message got through to them, and that that's why they acquitted. So,
praise the Lord.
Praise be the Lord, absolutely. But that shows that there's a chance there.
Done out in Eastern Oregon, you would have an entirely different format. I mean, Portland is Portland. If this was done where the crime was committed, I would say that the people there would acquit without a problem.
Oh yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And again, part of the reason I had Eric up on the program tonight is because, and we had talked about this over the phone, is we want to bring attention to any of the Patriots that are up there in that part of the country, you know, in northeastern United States. If it indeed does come to that, we need as many people as we can to get up there with those signs saying, you know, reminding the juries of the prospective jurors of jury nullification, you know, because let's face it, in looking at that 18 USC, 10 years and $250,000 fine just because you happen to be in a hotel room that a guy had a gun that you didn't know he had. I mean, that's the punishment doesn't fit the crime there, do you think? I mean, it's I don't know. Is it an automatic 10 years, Eric, or is it up to 10 years?
I think it's to the discretion. I don't think there's a mandate, unless it says mandatory, then it's probably up to the discretion of the judge. I thought when I read it a few years back, I thought they had 50 years. You could get up to 50 years. But 10 is bad enough. And that's what people are looking at for not even possessing anything. So that's why they had to come up with constructive possession.
Well, according to 18 USC, it's 10 years, but under the Patriot Act, they can hold you indefinitely. Look what they did to these prisoners in Guantanamo Bay, and I think there's a lot of them still in there, aren't there? Or did they let them go? I don't know. But my point is that, you know, when I read it, it said 10 years. Okay.
One thing I wanted to say that, you know, I've had the pleasure and the honor of having dinner with Randy Weaver. And I want to tell you that guy has been through everything, and it is an amazing testament to his incredible character that he is incredible now. And, you know, no matter how much, I mean, if anybody can get through this and still have the presence of mind to be still engaged, very intelligent, I mean, it was like being in the presence of a great man.
Let me interject something, William.
Yes.
I had the pleasure of driving to Plainfield, New Hampshire with Randy and sitting in the front seat and listening to his story one-on-one.
Incredible.
Yeah, and you're right. He's an amazing man. Okay, I'll tell you what.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I'll let you go. We got another caller, Fred in Michigan, is it? Fred, you're on with Michael and Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, are you in Long Island, right?
Oh,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're in Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I called out to Wayne County and ultimately received a call back, not from the sheriff, but, of course, a deputy. Captain Dan Burwell. No, Buckwell.
Okay.
And he referred me to a U.S. Marshal, Brian Carroll, number 541-465-6701. That's 541-465-6701.
Mm-hmm.
I left a message with Brian Carroll's voicemail. Probably won't hear back. I'm going to call back Monday and ask him about solitary confinement and the alleged statutory violation, and also an oath sworn affidavit from he and or his fellow marshals regarding the arrest, the reasons, etc., the evidentiary proof of a statutory act violation. And what is that is that they require presumed valid consent from the alleged offender. And the presumed valid consent is always acquiescence in the form of a signature, a presumed valid signature, which means authorized signature. And this is crucial intel because without the presumed valid, presumed authorized signature, they cannot move forward. And there's a prominent case of Kobe Bryant in L.A., who went before a judge on whatever statutory act violation. It's immaterial. It's all statutory act. It's all legalized fraud, extortion, racketeering. Okay? It's all color of law. So Kobe Bryant got onto the fact that he needed to declare to the judge that the judge was not in possession of any paperwork whatsoever bearing his authorized signature. And guess what? Kobe Bryant walked.
Yeah, but that won't happen to your average individual.
Well, the average individual needs to comprehend, okay, so we're average individuals, your words. If you've ever had a check, a checking account, where you assign your autograph as a so-called authorized signature is a miniature dot matrix line, which you have to use a magnifying glass to see this. Miniature dot matrix, the words authorized signature. Now, why is that there? A miniature dot matrix, the words authorized signature, or a woman in my locale at a state bank, no less, on her checks, it said original document. It's the same thing with
different. Let's back up. Okay. All right, Fred, duly noted. I'm running out of time, and I've got other callers on the line. But, Eric, you have said that so far Tom LaPierre has signed nothing, correct?
Theoretically, your caller was right. But try it in front of the witch's court. And if you're not Kobe Bryant with a big checkbook writing the cutting the deal behind the scenes, you're not going to get anywhere with that. I've seen it happen. They run you through whether they have a signature or not. It just makes it a little more profitable for them if they can get your signature, because that's part of the bonding of the case. It's not a legal thing. They're going to prosecute the people they want to prosecute no matter what. You can have the best paperwork in the world. You can sign anything or not.
Let me stop you. Fred, you've made a good point. I think I've got to let you go, buddy, because I've got another caller on the line running out of time. What? Did Fred? Oh, did you? Okay. He started to say something, I think. Okay, tell you what, we got another caller on the line, Eric. Let's go to Ken in Long Island. Ken, you're on with Michael and Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, and hello to Michael and hello to Eric. I'd like to consider maybe talking to Uncle Ralph up in Alaska, Winter Road. He speaks about the cases where if you can't rely on having a fair jury, which I believe Eric touched on earlier, you might want to consider a bench trial. I'm sorry for my voice. I have a lot of allergies. But in a bench trial, a judge is forced to give the law in the sense that he has to make the facts comport with
the elements
of law.
They don't honor their own laws. I've watched it. They don't honor their own laws. Not only do they not honor the statute that the legislature puts out when they don't want... I saw Judge Daniel Doyle of the New York State Supreme Court defy his own written ruling. He issued a one-sentence decree that the bankers for Bank of America had to send their lawyers into court if they wanted to steal this guy's house. And he said, the relief will not be granted. Okay. The relief will not be granted if the plaintiffs appear, no plaintiffs by the plaintiff's attorney.
Eric, stop. Let Ken finish, okay? Because I'm running out of time here.
I understand that. And what Ralph also talks about, what do you say to write a writ of mandamus against the judge and then going for an appeal?
Okay.
Everything's worth trying, but don't count on anything. Public pressure is the only thing that works in the end.
Okay.
I agree. But in the terms of in speaking to fixed juries, which I believe happens with the feds, basically, even if you have an honest jury, you basically, I don't know if I can use the word, can I use the word pissing contest between two lawyers trying to convince a jury where the judge does not read the entire law to the jury and doesn't read it to him until after the trial's over. Isn't that the case,
Eric?
I'll just say this: if you want to trust the judge, go ahead. But it's a big mistake, in my opinion.
Well, I'll interject here. Okay, I went through an issue many, many years ago. I'm not going to go through the whole story, but I was arrested for a fictitious charge of battery on a peace officer, which I did not do. Okay, and I was young. I was 21 years old or whatever it was, and it was a they dropped it to a misdemeanor, and I took a plea bargain because the prosecutor agreed to let me go on probation, and then as soon as I took the plea bargain, they turned around and tried to throw me in jail for a year. My attorney objected and ultimately got the case back to where it was. But I do agree with Eric on that they defy their own laws. They defy, you know, they'll say something and turn right around and say or do something different.
I agree. I'm just wondering when you face, it's kind of like the rock in the hard place scenario. If you really believe that the jury is going to be fixed, what are your alternatives?
All right, Eric, is there any way to know? I mean, they question, the prosecution and the defense questions the jurors before they let them on the seat, right? And so, obviously we're dealing with a public defender, so he's not going to care, you know. But if I were, go ahead.
No, it's okay. Well, public defender
cares a great deal. He wants a conviction, so he cares, a great deal. He doesn't care about the rights of the
That's what I mean, because he's an officer of the court. So what I'm saying is an outside attorney, which is an officer of the court anyway, you know, when they're questioning for the jury, the prosecution and the defense gets to question the jurors. And if I were a defense attorney questioning a juror and I heard them say that, you know, they had a husband that was a state trooper or, you know, my wife's the mayor or whatever, I would dismiss that juror. But the public defender won't. That's the point. Right.
Oh, then if you go with the attorney, will sell you out. You know, you really are better off giving it a shot on your own. You can either get sold out by your attorney, or you can have a difficult uphill road.
I agree with you, but here's the issue on that: if he goes pro se, they will try to trip him up on the rules of criminal procedure, which I believe there's about 50 of them, and that's what they do.
Tons of them. That's
what they did to Irwin Schiff, because Irwin Schiff was on point, and they would come every time he would open his mouth, the prosecution would object, and they would get him off balance. They would keep him off target, and that's what they do. This whole thing is a hornet's nest, and the bottom line is going to be up to Tom. But I tell you what, if I were in that position right now, I would take my chances with my own knowledge rather than go with a public defender.
Well, because it's him, because he does have knowledge. If it was just, a person who had never been broadcasting or researching, then it might be different. But Tom has enough, I think, where he could give it a good shot, brush up on the procedure law, and do the best he can with public pressure coming from us, with a whole bunch of calls to
support. If they even allow him access to bone up on the rules of criminal procedure. If they don't,
that's why we need to call the sheriff. And don't let that captain at the sheriff's department tell you people, oh, you got to call Brian Carroll the marshal. It's not up to Brian Carroll whether he's in solitary confinement or not. It's up to the sheriff Trapp. He's the one that's putting Tom in solitary confinement. He's liable for what's going on. So keep the pressure on him. They all want to say, oh, don't talk to us. Go up the food chain. Once again, what was the first thing I said? Remind him he's the chief peace officer. The definition of sheriff does not say, oh, the marshal Brian Carroll's the chief peace officer. And
I know.
Eric,
we're out of time. They're experts at giving people the runaround. I got to let you go. I'll be back in touch with you. Thank you so much for coming up. Thank you, folks, for listening.
Good.
I will have Eric up again, and I will talk to you off the air. Okay, Eric? Thanks a lot. You folks have a good weekend. Have a happy Easter. Good night.
I've paid a price, and I'll keep paying.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. Owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.